This Be Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate, so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K through 12th grade curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. If you want to bring IXL to your school, you can learn more at IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, activity periods, RTI, therapy, and teacher appointments, and much more. With its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This is Dr. Karen, and you are listening to the De Facto Leaders Podcast on the Be Podcast Network, where I share up-to-date, evidence-based practices, my own experience, and guest interviews designed to help pediatric therapists, educators, and aspiring school leaders design services that support social, emotional, and academic growth and set kids up for success in adulthood. Whether you want to learn effective strategies for your therapy session or classroom, be an influential leader on your team, or find creative ways to use your skills to advance in your career, I've got you covered. Hey there, it's Dr. Karen, and welcome to episode 156 of the De Facto Leaders Podcast on the Be Podcast Network. No one working in special education has ever said, "I chose this career so I could do paperwork all evening and weekend." Yet many realize after getting into the field that administrative demands can take away from time spent with students or collaborating with colleagues. That's why I was so excited to connect with Sean Clam, special educator and founder of Playground IEP, in this episode. After starting his career as a teacher and then special education administrator, Sean was inspired to find a solution that would streamline and potentially remove some of the behind-the-scenes work special educators need to do to manage service plans. Sean Clam is the founder of Playground IEP. He is a special educator and former director of special education at Butler College Prep in Chicago. After serving as a director for 5 years, Sean transitioned to build Playground IEP, the special education tools he wished he had while working in the school. Playground IEP is a new class of caseload management software that increases collaboration and automates many of the manual caseload management tasks. Sean and his team also built IEP Copilot, which uses AI to assist in writing IEP goals, behavioral intervention plans, and other sections of the IEP. Sean and his team are committed to building tools that allow teachers to spend more time with students and less time with spreadsheets. During this entire conversation until the very end, I was calling it IEP Playground instead of Playground IEP. So I wanted to make sure I corrected that mistake. If you do want to learn more about what Sean is working on, it is Playground IEP, not IEP Playground, and you can learn more about it at playgroundiep.com. In this conversation, we discuss what's the real motivation behind using AI and technology, how to keep the entire team in the loop about goals and accommodations instead of letting IEPs collect dust in a binder on the shelf. When teachers aren't supported, IEPs don't get fully implemented. How do we solve that problem? We also talk about using AI and technology to make space for better instructional practices and team collaboration. And we wrap up by talking about things like systems versus tools versus culture, and how leadership can avoid the technology for the sake of technology trap and avoid dumping yet another tool on their staff that they have to implement. Before we get going, I wanted to mention the School of Clinical Leadership, my program that helps related service providers guide their teams to support students' executive functioning across the day. When you're talking about executive functioning, this is something that is a team effort. While direct therapy can be effective for certain things, it is really important that students have the appropriate supports and accommodations in the classroom, and also that we're communicating effectively with parents and getting the entire team on board. And one of the biggest objections that I find when I mention this to clinicians is, when am I going to find time to collaborate with the other team members? So that's why this goes along with the theme of the episode, which is about building the right systems and using the right tools so that we can make space for that effective collaboration. Another important component of that is understanding what those effective accommodations and strategies and other supports look like, both in direct therapy as well as in the classroom or even in the home setting. So it's really important for those people in those special education roles to know how to support the other members of their team. Part of it is about creating systems and workflows or automating them with technology, which is what we're talking about today. But part of it is understanding those effective practices. And I show you how to do that as it relates to building students' cognitive skills and executive functioning in the School of Clinical Leadership. To learn more about the program, go to drkarendudekbrennan.com/clinical leadership. Now, please enjoy this conversation with Sean Clam. Today, I'm joined by Sean Clam from IEP Playground. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much.
Well, let's start off by having you share a little bit about yourself and what brought you to the work that you're doing now.
Yes. So I am a special educator. My backstory is that I joined Teach for America in 2014. And in the Teach for America application process, there's a box that says, would you mind teaching special ed? And I thought, well, if this increases my chances of getting accepted into the program, I'll check the box. Mm-hmm. So I'll check the box. And I didn't realize at that moment how providential that was. I ended up getting placed in special ed in Chicago at a brand new charter school on 103rd. And I absolutely loved it. My first year was very unique. I had 3 students in my class. The next year, that class expanded to 14 students. And then somehow I became the director of special ed at that school. So I inherited a caseload of probably around 150 total students between IEPs and 504s. I led that team for 5 years and I loved doing it. It was an incredibly hard job. Throughout my time there, I was really confused on why there was no tools to make the job easier, specifically around organization, management. Everything that I was doing, I had to build from scratch in a spreadsheet or papers, and it was just very inefficient. So when I left the school in October of 2021, I then left to go build Playground IEP, which is what I've been working on the past 2 years.
Yeah, great. I love how, so I know other people who did the same thing where they thought, I'll add special ed, or I'll say that I'm open to it just to increase my chances of getting a job as a teacher. And then that's where it took them. My brother actually did that same thing. He was in the social sciences. And as you know, sometimes it can be hard to get a job in that area because they're so specific. And I think immediately when he was in finishing up his degree, he realized I better add special ed. And of course that's, it was a similar situation where that's where the need was. And I know other people that had the same experience. So with what you're building now, can you share a little bit about what it is and what
what made you realize that this was something that needed to be done?
Sure. Before I answer that, just to your point about special educators, I'm sure that I know you know this, and I'm sure your listeners know this,
yeah,
that there is a special ed teaching shortage out there.
Yep.
And so I promise you, you can get a job anywhere in this whole country by becoming a special educator. It was one of the best decisions I've ever made, and I would encourage anyone to do it.
Yeah, I mean, with I'm licensed to be an SLP and a special ed director, and those are two huge areas of need in the state of Illinois. And I think that's the case in lots of other geographic regions as well. But really, there's a lot of pockets in the school systems that where the, there's certain positions that they just don't have enough people. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, when I look at the teaching shortage, you can solve it one in two ways, basically. You can go find more people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't exist. Or you can figure out how do you make the job more sustainable for the people that you already have in your school.
Yeah.
That is a harder problem to solve. And that really is kind of at the heart of what we're doing with Playground. And just making teachers' lives easier.
Mm-hmm. We had an interesting conversation when we met about the ed tech space, because I went on kind of a career exploration this past year, and ed tech is one of the places where people are leaving education and they're going to work for ed tech companies, which is both good and bad. It's good that people who have experience in the schools are working at these companies that are providing products for teachers and therapists and administrators. Obviously, the people who have the tech backgrounds and know how to build things are really important, but you also need people in there who know what needs to be there to help kids learn and to be evidence-based. But then the other problem is that we're losing teachers. So that is, I'm not really sure what the solution is, but I know that, gosh, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but there's a lot of positions where there's just not enough people. And then it makes it harder for the people that are there. So in your experience, I know that there's a lot of different opinions about why people leave jobs. What makes people choose a job in the first place? What keeps someone satisfied and happy there? And it was the League of Women Voters. So there was a politician from Illinois who came and was just discussing different issues. And someone from the audience stood up and said, "Do you know how many vacancies there are in education, specifically special education?" And he said, "Well, I think the solution is we need to pay teachers more." And I've heard so many people say that, where they're like, "This is the solution, just pay them more." And of course, I agree that the salary should be higher, but I'm curious your thoughts on that, if you agree, or if you think, okay, are there some other things that we're missing here?
That is a great question. I felt like I was getting paid very well, and it was not the money that kept me at that school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I say that, absolutely, we all deserve to get paid more. There's no teacher, regardless of how much you get paid, that is paid their worth.
Yeah.
We are all doing more than, we are all worth way more than our salary. But I don't think that that's actually the thing mm-hmm. that gets people to leave.
Yeah.
Especially on the special ed side. So you have, you often have a situation where if you are a strong special educator, you take on a lot of responsibility, because unfortunately, gen ed teachers look to you as kind of the person that will take care of all things IEPs.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the paperwork, on top of collaborating with parents, on top of the IEP meetings, it's a heavy burden to bear. And without additional support, people leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was talking to someone before and I said, I don't think anyone said I want to be a teacher because I'm so inspired to do hours of paperwork on my nights and weekends. I don't think anyone's saying that. And that's probably one of the biggest complaints that I have, especially with some of the contract companies that do, they might provide SLPs or OTs or some of the other related services. One of the biggest things that the recruiters would sell me on, because I pursued some of those roles to see if it made sense, was you get to show up and work with the kids and do your therapy, and there's less admin work. And that was a big selling point that they would always emphasize if it was a good recruiter who really understood the pain points right. of somebody working in special ed. So yeah, I have so many different thoughts on that, but what do you see? So when I talk to people who are in there working with kids, but also have these other things that are thrown on their plate and they wear all these different hats, there's always this ideal situation of what they would like to be doing. They'd like to be able to meet with, if it's a special ed teacher or an SLP or a psychologist or whoever, they want to be able to meet so they can work together so that all the services don't feel so siloed off. But the number one thing that's keeping them from doing that is our caseloads are too big and there's not enough staff to do all of these things. And we just don't have time to meet to make sure that we are sharing information and resources, or even just for the connection piece so that you don't feel so lonely in your role. So yeah, I'd love to hear your experience sure. on that and some things that you're thinking about doing that could potentially solve that issue.
Sure. So to go back to the teaching shortage, there's just not people to hire. Mm-hmm. And I am a firm believer that if we shift things around and just organize our lives better, teachers can actually do what they got into the business to do, which is to support students. Mm-hmm. I think that is still possible, even with the size of the caseload. However, what we have found, what I noticed at my school and what I see at a lot of other schools, is that teachers get caught up doing logistics work, organization work, and everybody is living in a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the hard things in special ed is that the tools that would make the job easier don't exist. So an incredible amount of time is spent by the director of special ed or by case managers to figure out, how do I build these tools to like make my life easier? But to do that takes a lot of time and energy away from actually servicing these students.
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to my time. These thoughts go back to my time at when I was managing the caseload at Butler. We spent, well, first of all, nobody, I hate to say this, but like nobody reads IEPs. Like if we just start.
Yeah. There, oh, I know. I could. That's a whole other conversation. But
so like, let's start there. Let's just assume that nobody's reading the IEPs. And if you are, thank you. Keep doing it, please. But nobody's reading these IEPs. So then what the special ed team has to do is figure out, okay, how do I take this very dense document and chop it up and summarize it and kind of make it a bite-sized format for my gen ed teacher to digest? Because if my gen ed teacher don't understand the needs of my students, then they can't alleviate some of the burden that I have to make sure that these students have their services that are legally required to be provided.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of servicing the student directly, you have so much time and energy that's spent trying to create systems to make it easy for gen ed teachers to serve the students.
Yeah.
Well, so at the beginning of the year, schools come up with these IEP snapshots and they have professional developments and they might even print everything out and put it in a binder. And then we know what happens with that binder.
Yep. It goes on the shelf.
Right. So not only did we, and this is just cruel, because not only did we just spend like hours and hours creating all these things, but now we got to spend hours and hours like on the backside of that, like then servicing the student, because now the gen ed teacher is not doing it. Now, I'm going to assume best intent here. every gen ed teacher that I've ever talked to, they want to support the caseload, but it's overwhelming on top of all the other things that they have going on.
Right.
And so with Playground, what really the thought was like, this is crazy. Why can't there be a system that makes it very, very easy for gen ed teachers to access this information? And on the special ed side, we can automate a lot of these processes that are manual so mm-hmm. that you can spend more time with your students and less time with spreadsheets.
Yeah.
That's at the heart of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to almost shift what the IEP means and what its purpose is. And so obviously it's a legally binding document to protect everyone's rights, both the district and the student and all parties involved, but also a communication tool. And I think that people forget that last part because of the way that IEPs look, they're not super friendly. And so as a result, in our minds, we think this is in the paperwork file and I'm just going to put it over here in the drawer or wherever it is. And I know that some of the people that I've interacted with that might be listening, I get so many questions about how to write goals and what accommodations are appropriate. And people spend so much time and mental bandwidth on the minutia of how to word a goal. And I find myself doing the same just because I get so many questions. But really what I want to say to people with goals and with managing the data as well is, yes, of course, we need to be compliant. But if you're spending more time than you need to, there's diminishing returns. And right. So I'm always trying to find that sweet spot of what is good enough? Where do we get to that point of diminishing returns where we're just wasting time focusing on this document when there could be a better way to communicate that? And I know that a lot of people stress about getting the wording right on the goals because I think what's at the root of that is this fear that if I don't word it perfectly on this document, my student's right. not going to get what they need. But that's not the solution because, as you said, the IEP goes in the binder on the shelf, and it doesn't matter how that goal is worded if people don't have an accessible way to look at that information and actually understand what it means. So, yeah, I mean, I see that all the time as 100%. Well. So, yeah, I'd love for you to just share a little bit about how IEP Playground works and where it can solve some of those things and make it more accessible so that we can improve some of that communication so that we're not hitting that point of diminishing returns.
Sure. Yeah. So we're at a really exciting time with technology, especially with AI. And so to your point, unfortunately, an IEP is not a magic document. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of like, oh, this kid needs an IEP. Oh, really? Like, and what would happen if they had an IEP?
Right.
Like,
wave the magic wand.
It's not a magic document. Like, there's a lot of work that needs to get put in.
Mm-hmm.
But what Playground does is it makes it easy. Think of Playground IEP as a collaboration tool and automation tool for caseload management.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's Playground IEP, and then we also built a second tool, IEP Copilot. And to go back to your point about writing goals, what's really cool about technology right now is that you can use technology to actually write a better goal in a matter of seconds than you could probably write in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So with technology now, we can get away from just spending so much time trying to craft something perfect because the technology can do that. And then it frees us up to, now that we have something very substantial, go and actually service those students. So on IEP mm-hmm. Copilot, you can actually go and write IEP goals, very comprehensive IEP goals with benchmarks. You can even incorporate standards into those goals, and you can generate these things in a matter of seconds where it would take, 30 minutes normally to write this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the Playground piece, to kind of put Playground correctly in the proper context, it sits between the student information system and then the IEP writing system. So there's these two systems already exist in every school, and usually they don't talk to one another. So in between these two things sits a million spreadsheets, the most complicated spreadsheets you've ever seen, to try to sync all this data together. And Playground replaces all of that. And because it's a comprehensive web app, you can automate a lot of things, including IEP scheduling, tracking accommodations, and a lot of other powerful things. And it does it automatically, whereas in the past, it just takes so much work to build out these spreadsheets.
So really, you have most districts have some kind of a web-based IEP system where where it's actually housed. You fill in the fillable forms and print it out and bring it to your meeting. But then typically people have some other type of tracking system. They have their Google spreadsheet with all of their annual reviews that are coming up, or whatever tools that they're using to communicate with teachers, or just for their own organization to make sure that they are in compliance with all their meetings and things like that, and just keep track of what the goals are. So this is with IEP Playground, it's more of a data management tool so that you can see all of that information and also give other people access to it so that they can access that as well.
Yeah, we think of it as actually a brand new class of software. It's not an IEP writing system, but it helps with the 99% of case management that is not writing the IEP.
Okay. The middleman.
Yeah, when we think about special ed, like so much of special education support is outside of the actual writing of the IEP.
Right. The IEP is like, let's get this done.
Yeah. And there needs to be a system to do that. But but even Gen Ed teachers like really don't have access to this platform. And what's funny in Chicago, it's so hard to actually get into the system that usually at every school in Chicago, there's only one login that works and it's shared throughout the entire school, which is a different problem altogether.
Oh, wow. So I would, if I were a therapist and you were a teacher, we'd have the same login.
Now, it's not designed. That's not best practice, but because it's so hard.
Like we're the same person according to the system.
Yeah. It's so hard to
get. Okay,
it's messed up. I mean, that's a whole different conversation. But the point is that, like, for Gen Ed teachers, oftentimes they don't even have access to the IEP writing system.
Yeah, that's typical.
Like, even these IEPs are being shared in a Google Drive, or, you know, like what we said earlier, printed out and put in binders. You still have to create all the infrastructure to share these snapshots or whatever. And what Playground does is we create that infrastructure right away, and it just is easy. EdTech platforms or education technology is notorious for death by 50 clicks. Like,
oh yeah,
this is crazy. And when we designed Playground, because of my time in the school, you can do everything in two clicks or less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's designed intentionally to be a resource for teachers so that they actually use it. Cause the last thing that we need is more software in schools that just takes up people's time.
Yeah. So we have the IEP Playground that manages all of the information that makes it accessible to people. And then the other tool that you mentioned, can you talk a little bit about that? And I'd love to know how it is similar or different to other tools like ChatGPT. Because I know that there's a lot of people who are typing into ChatGPT, write me some goals for whatever, you know, whatever their area is. I mean, I've definitely tried it to see what it would give me, and it's interesting.
Yeah. ChatGPT, as we all know, is a very, very powerful tool. And so what we did, and I think most of us can see the potential of it. It's like, wow, I want this to write this, you know, goals or even maybe.
Oh, I've used it for a lot of things.
But you know, what you probably have found is that, like, to get it right, you got to prompt it in a certain way. And you spend a lot of time tweaking your prompts to get it to kind of output really what you want. And so what we did was we took the concept essentially of ChatGPT, which underneath ChatGPT is just a large language model with AI, which you don't even need to know what it is. It's just basically
the programming language for how it works.
It just generates text. And so what we did with IEP Copilot is basically create a platform that sits, you can think of it as sitting on top of ChatGPT.
Okay.
And so the benefit is that behind the scenes on IEP Copilot, we've already created the prompts so that the AI will return something that's very comprehensive already. So instead of the user having to go in and figure out how to prompt this to make a great IEP goal, we've done all that work. And so on the user side, you just enter in information about the student or what type of goal you want, and it's going to return something that's very, very comprehensive, and that is like, it's a smart goal and it's designed to be in line with what IEP goals normally are. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a better user experience, and it eliminates the time that it takes to prompt the AI.
Mm-hmm.
We do think it's quite powerful, and it's completely free. So like, it's so free that we made it where you don't even need to log in to experience the magic of it. So you can go right now, iepcopilot.ai, and generate a goal probably in 15 seconds that is the equivalent of what it would take you to do in an hour.
Yeah.
I wanted to take a quick break here and talk about the School of Clinical Leadership, my program that gives related service providers in the K-12 setting a framework for putting executive functioning support in place. Part of effective practices has to do with your interventions. Are you being evidence-based or following the research when it comes to designing your intervention plan? But putting the right systems in place and navigating the logistics is really important as well. And that's why tools like Playground IEP or IEP Copilot, as we are discussing, can be really helpful in putting some of those systems in place so that you have the bandwidth for collaborating with the other team members. But once you create that space, you have to have a plan for how you're going to use that time effectively. And one of the most powerful things that you can do as a related service provider supporting the general education teachers is show them strategies for building students' executive functioning. That's what I show you how to do in the School of Clinical Leadership. To learn more about the program, go to drkarendudekbrandon.com/clinical-leadership. Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning. Increased choice and agency for students. Dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flex time for any purpose. Want to see it for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. Now let's get back to the conversation.
I think that's interesting for people to understand how the AI works, because there is, I know a lot of people are using it and are excited about using it, but then there's also a lot of skepticism. I know there's skepticism on the student side of, are students using this to write their papers? And how can I do this ethically? It goes back to the idea of diminishing returns. Because what I always tell people with both goals and data collection is that we have to get back to the purpose of what we're doing. The purpose of a goal and data is that we want to stay compliant and make sure that we are writing the language in a way that, that gets the student what they need. And then we also need information. We need something that allows us to track so that we can make sure that our intervention or our instruction, therapy, whatever it is that we're doing is working. So we need to be compliant and we need information. And if we have enough, then, then that's sufficient. And so I think going back to that is really helpful, but where do you see as far as this balance between, I mean, people don't want to be, I don't know, winging it isn't the word that I'm looking for here, but people want to make sure that they're being thorough and individualized and that they're not shortchanging their students. And I know that with tools like this, that there are always updates with tech products. An algorithm or the language gets smarter over time. So something like ChatGPT, and then if you have something on top of it that gives it more information, can be really powerful. But even with tools like that, it's evolving over time. So where do you see, how do you see that looking as far as people who are those early adopters and those people that want to use it right now, but also know that this is kind of evolving and they want to know how to balance using AI, but also keeping the human element in there and making sure that we're making good decisions?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's all these news articles or people saying that AI is going to replace humans.
Yeah.
The good thing for special educators, and this is another reason you should be a special educator, is that special educators aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, what is so great about the AI, though, is that there has never been a tool that alleviates as much pain and time as what AI does even right now. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about IEP Copilot and when it's used best when it's supervised, obviously, by the special education teacher. Mm-hmm. And so we think, and we've seen that special teachers, when they use IEP Copilot, are actually creating significantly more comprehensive IEPs for a few reasons. Number one, mm-hmm. the AI is going to generate probably a more comprehensive goal than a human would do on average, because we are just limited in the time that we have to create amazing goals. Not only that, but because it can do it in just a fraction of the time that it would take normally, now as a special educator, I'm freed up to really super customize this to the student. And so that is really, really where it's powerful. The AI will get you, let's say, 80% of the way there. And then your time can be then spent tweaking it, customizing it, and making it super powerful for the student and customized for the student. Versus in the past, we're spending so much time creating ideas, not enough time tailoring it to the student. Mm-hmm. I have one quick example around this. On IEP Copilot, you can generate behavior intervention plans. So mm-hmm. you can tell the system, this is what the student is struggling with. And what the AI does is it generates just a long list of interventions and ideas to help support that student, replacement behaviors and all these and strategies and all these things that can help support that student and teachers support that student with the behavior. So the powerful thing about that is it might not generate it in the correct format that you need to put into the IEP system. Mm-hmm. To write the behavior intervention plan. But what it does is it gives people ideas on how to actually create strategies and supports for this particular student so that the focus can be servicing the student versus trying to figure out how to write the paperwork.
Yeah. I see it as a cognitive load issue where I'm thinking about executive functioning, the process of generating ideas versus right. evaluating and shifting through. And obviously we don't want to replace those things, but we have a lot of opportunities in day-to-day lives when we have to be able to come up with ideas on the fly. I can just think about how many times you would need to just, you're in the middle of a lesson and something's not going the way that you want it. And you have to come up with a lot of ideas in your head about where to go next. And you get tired as you go throughout your day. You get decision fatigue. Okay. So if you can cut down on some of that and get to the point where you are, someone has generated or something, if it's an AI tool, has generated a lot of ideas and it gets things going so that you have more bandwidth to do that particular skill right. of starting from scratch in other situations where you actually need to, as opposed to something that is... you know, a paperwork issue versus working with a human issue.
With AI, I think where the real power is, and we're going to get here eventually, is it's, right now it's kind of it's helping with existing workflows. So yeah. For instance, if you need to write this lesson plan, it'll write this lesson plan. But the real power is, how do you use the AI to eliminate the workflows?
Yeah.
One of the things that we really focus on with Playground is there's a lot of different things that need to be done in special ed. How can we use AI? Not just to speed up those things, but to eliminate a lot of those things altogether.
Yeah. I mean, I can just think of so many things that people would be able to do if they could eliminate some of the work that they have to do. And right. Where I've kind of gone with it is that I tell people, you do the work up front to build these systems, your own operating procedures, your own tools, and then it's made and you have a little bit more bandwidth to go focus on right. other things. And when I think about, I call them assets, you know, a spreadsheet that you've created with all of your annual reviews coming up is an asset that you've created that you can now use because you've invested the time up front to build it. But we need tools, we need materials. The other types of assets that I talk about are relationships. And mm-hmm. you have an alliance with another person on the team with related service providers. I know that something that can be really useful is that if you're an SLP, you can work together with a psychologist or social worker or counselor. I would do that with special ed teachers as well, so that instead of just being the only person that's thinking about how do I support the teachers, you have a team of people who can do that. And I see tools like this. It's one of those assets that helps you get to the next asset, which is the time to meet and build relationships. Right. And instead of sending this quick email that gets pushed to the bottom of the inbox, you can have a conversation with someone. And I do see workflows as a way to eliminate meetings that don't need to happen, but we don't want to completely do that. So
I love the way you framed that, actually. You know, at the heart of a special educator, like at the core function of the job is a relationship manager.
Mm-hmm.
There's no learning that happens outside of a relationship. I mean, we know this. And not only that, but it's not like teacher to student is super important. Teacher mm-hmm. to teacher is probably like a little bit more high level.
Yeah, but really important as well.
You can leverage that relationship so that your students are then served. And then I think the one that's somewhat overlooked is teacher to parent.
Oh, yeah.
That one, like if you want to avoid a million headaches in your life, spend the time building that relationship with parents. I mean, I could talk for an hour about how to avoid due process, and it's just centered around like having great parent relationships. Mm-hmm. But those are, you know, those things are like higher level assets, if you will, because like if yeah. your compliance is bad, you gotta, you know, that is what you gotta worry on. And
right.
You know, in your example, there's still time that's having to create these assets, whether it's a spreadsheet or whatever. And we want to just get rid of that completely for schools mm-hmm. and give them a system. It's all ready to go so that they can spend their time on these higher level assets. The other thing that I would say about that is when we work with schools, there's really two types of schools that we see ourselves working with. The first school is, well, there's schools like the special ed team is kind of a hot mess express. We'll come yeah. in, we'll create those assets, we'll stabilize the whole situation. We actually have found, though, that the schools with a very, very high functioning special ed team, they are at serious risk in the upcoming years, because usually if it's super high functioning, it's because of one or two people carrying the load of everything. And then they get burnt out and they leave. And when they leave, they walk out the door with all the assets.
Oh, that's interesting.
It kind of crumbles. And so we like to work with high functioning SPED teams, because then we can stabilize the situation and make it more sustainable for the person at the top driving the excellence.
Yeah. So it's a combination of people and systems. I've right. had some conversations too with the whole professional development conversation, that you can be the most amazing trainer in the world, but if you are providing training to a district that doesn't have the right systems in place, those people are not going to be able to follow through on what you recommended. Sure, there might be some benefit. You might change people's ideas about something, or maybe someone will go and work for another district and be able to use what you said. Maybe it prompts people to get additional training, but it is really hard if the system is not in place. But yeah, that I love that the linchpin example that you just gave, where it's not the system, it's the person who is holding it all together. And you really need both to in order for it to be stable. So I was thinking about as we were talking through the concept of assets. And I love that you brought up parents as well, because with this concept of stacking, we take care of one problem, we build assets and systems in this one area, and that allows us to expand to other areas. So we've got our workflows that are, we've got good systems here. So now the team can work better together and there's better collaboration between team members. And maybe now they have more bandwidth to think about other things like talking to the administrators or talking to the parents. So where do you see tools like IEP Playground and other AI tools leading us to be able to do things like that when it comes to parent engagement? Is there something that you're thinking about on the horizon that could pull in not just the people in school, but also the people who are interacting with kids outside of the school day?
It's a great question. I'm going to take a step back to answer that.
Okay.
Answer maybe more holistically.
Okay.
This is where I think a lot of edtech companies actually get it way wrong.
Okay.
Because we don't need, we all know, especially if you work in a school, you don't need another platform that's just dropped on top of you.
Right.
And the last thing that I want to do is just kind of drop in, like, give a school this software and now it's just another thing for people to do and people are mad at it to use it and whatever.
Yeah.
The harder thing to do in schools is shift the culture around special ed. And that is really what I am interested in doing.
Yeah.
And so that should always be the focus. So when we talk about parents, how do you shift the culture inside the school amongst the staff so that their focus is not just on the student, not just on serving the student, but on serving the family, which is really what we're in the business of doing, servicing families and parents and children. That takes a lot of work and a lot of intentionality. But if you start there, then you can design systems that help shift culture. And culture, I promise you, doesn't shift if your platform is death by 50 clicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we actually, we don't, the technology tools, the AI and all that, that is not the end all be all for us. That is an instrument for us to drive change in a school. We always want to work from, I'm always thinking, how can this technology shift behavior? Not how can I shift behavior so that they can use this technology?
Yeah.
And oftentimes, it's a lot of that.
In ed tech specifically. Yeah. When you're thinking about user experience, a lot of times it's there is training involved, which is good. There should be with tools, curriculums, there should be a training component. Oh, what's really interesting is that when I had conversations with people in ed tech this past year, when I was looking into potentially doing work for some of them, and I talked to people who came from education and were in ed tech or that started in ed tech and had always been working for companies that made educational products, but didn't have an education background. So they hadn't been in a school before. And it's really interesting when you talk to the sales and the marketing team, and then there's the product team that's sort of linked up with them versus the people who came from the schools. I always got a very different feeling about what their motivations were. And I have had some conversations with people who have a good understanding of both sides and say, hey, I understand that the marketing team wants to know what the users are saying and what people are willing to buy because that's how we generate revenue and stay in business so that we can help people. And I completely understand that. But then there's this ethical side of, just because people are asking for it doesn't mean that they understand what they need, right? Or it doesn't mean that it's ethical. And one of the things that came up was that districts want tools that are very transparent and you can just pop into a platform and kind of figure it out, that they have that. I'm trying to think of the word, but basically it's when you log into a platform, it is very easy to figure out how to use it.
Intuitive.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. So they want intuitive platforms and they want intuitive curriculums because it's so enticing for an administrator who's trying to scale things across buildings, grade levels, whatever, or even the therapists who understand how to individualize and are so bogged down that they want some of that decision-making fatigue taken away and they want a curriculum. They want low prep. They want something they can print and go or log in and go. And again, it's just about the decision fatigue. And I completely understand why they're asking for that. But as a person who creates products, I have a hard time providing that because I know that it might not be what they need. Because as you said, there are these underlying beliefs about what they're doing. There's the cultural aspects that might not be what they need. And I know that it sounds enticing to have an intuitive curriculum where you can just, again, you're training to the curriculum. You're not training to the culture or the values or the actual skills. So that's my rant on that. I'm curious if you've seen that same thing where there's the curriculum and the tools and they play together.
Yeah. So I think it's a good thing that if people have the bias to be intuitive, I think that overall it's a great thing. We need more intuitive tools.
Yeah.
I believe in opinionated software. And what I mean by that is there's some software that's like, okay, here's a blank slate and we'll like customize it to like whatever you want.
Yeah. Well,
to your point, it's like, okay, actually we have an opinion of how to best go about this based on all of our experience and all the research that we've done with schools that we've worked with. And so we'll be very intentional about the features that we launch, the tools that we build, have a certain point of view for how things should be done. With that said, though, I think what is very important is to then co-build with your schools. Mm-hmm. So the schools that we work with, we're in constant collaboration with, what tools do you need to do your job better? But it's never they requested this, so we're going to just go build this without any kind of critical thinking behind that and how it impacts all users. You know, the other thing that happens in education, I'm sure you're aware of this, is like sometimes the users are not the buyers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, that's a good point.
So there is a balance in like, how do you build features that are enticing for buyers? But then how do you then create other, like, how is the platform also most impactful to the users that are going to be on it every day?
Yeah. So what you're saying is, for example, the students might be the users or the teachers might be the users, but they're not the ones making the purchasing decision.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when you get, you create potential resentment of the school. Like, people have to do this thing that doesn't really make sense. And this happens this happens everywhere in every business. It's not just schools, but
that is the truth. As somebody who I we were talking before about how I have done mostly B2C, meaning I'm selling directly to the users. I'm selling programs and products to therapists and teachers who are directly using them. So they are often going, either they're purchasing it with their own funds or funds that have been provided to them by the district within their budget, or they're going to their administrator saying, here's a program I want to buy, here's why, and will you approve this? it is a very different conversation to be talking to the administrator, depending on who it is, if it's a special ed director, if it's a curriculum director, or even if you're going beyond that, because their head is not in the same place. And so you really have to know how to talk to the person who's making that decision. And sometimes the understanding of the problem is very different. And it's not that one person is wrong and one person is right. It's just they're seeing it from a different angle. And I mean, a therapist who's working directly with kids or a teacher who is in a classroom has a very different perspective than the superintendent who is seeing all of this from a bird's eye view going on. And yeah, it's it's hard because you can do more when you have something that's bigger, but right. It's hard when you have all these people with different opinions about what's going on.
Yeah, if there's any principals listening, my biggest advice to the principals around special ed is like, go figure out what's happening in special ed. It's too easy to say, director of special ed, you figure it out. Like, go sit in their office for a day. Go be in IEP meetings or go ask them, what do you spend your time doing all day long? Because I bet you what they spend their time doing might be very different than what you think they're doing, or even what they do versus what they think they should be doing. You know, like the expectations in the job. I mean, the job is so complex. And the more that we can have administrators, principals, superintendents, even deans of instruction, aware of what's happening in special ed, the more we can create that empathy, the better decisions we're going to make for our students and our families with IEPs. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. The principal role is really interesting because it is in this middle space where they're not providing the direct instruction or therapy, but then they still report to someone else. And it really depends on the size of the district, because I was in El Paso, and that's a small district. And so the principals were very in the loop about what was going on in special ed because of the size of the district. I had one elementary school principal that I worked with was very much involved in even delivering some of the behavioral interventions. You know, sometimes kids would go in her office and she would be really involved in that process, or even just showing up to all of the IEP meetings instead of a special ed administrator doing it, depending on what the situation was. But I know in bigger districts, there's different, the chain of command looks different. And so that's not always the case. It is sort of,
right.
It's interesting because I had experience in a smaller district, and your role gets, you wear more hats in your role versus being able to separate all these different levels like you would with a bigger district. And I think each one is, you know, they each have their benefits and challenges to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to know that there's some schools out there like in El Paso that the principals are like completely aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. I mean, and really, I think really at the end of the day, like students with IEPs are gen ed students first.
Yeah.
And way too often I see it's like, oh, especially if there's a strong sped team, it's like, oh, okay, the special ed team is going to deal with all things.
Yeah.
IEPs. And if a teacher sees that this kid has an IEP, all of a sudden they don't know how to support this student. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. They sure turn their brain off.
Yeah, it's like, okay, think of, if this kid didn't have an IEP, what would you do to support them? And they, you know, they can come up with all these interventions. But sometimes people get intimidated by the label IEP.
Mm-hmm. They definitely do.
But so, that's a position. And
yeah,
I'm
well,
here to help schools better serve their kids.
Well, hopefully the work that you're doing can help to make things less siloed off and help things to be more seamless, regardless of the size of the district. Yeah. So let's, before we wrap up, where can people learn about the work that you're doing? I know that we've got we've got your two platforms that we want to make sure that we mention. So the one is IEP Playground, and where can people learn about that?
Yep. Playground IEP.
Was I saying it wrong this entire time?
You know what? A lot of people say IEP Playground. I'll take it both ways. IEP Playground, Playground IEP, but it, okay. You can only find it at playgroundiep.com. I should buy iepplayground.com, but anyways.
You should.
Playgroundiep.com. You can actually, right on the website, sign up, and then we'll be in touch. We do offer pilots to schools at a very low cost. Because we are more interested about shifting culture than making money initially. So whatever we can do to help, we'll do that. We'll pilot, we'll support. And then there is iepcopilot.ai. You can find that information also on the Playground IEP website or going to iepcopilot.ai, and you can start to use AI in your IEP writing right away.
Great. So Playground IEP, I said it right that time. That's the tool that is the interface, that's the middleman between the actual IEP document, but helps you manage the goals, the communication, the accommodations, and all of those spreadsheets that you have in between the IEP and the implementation. That's the web-based tool that helps with that. And then IEP Copilot is the AI tool that helps with generating IEP goals. That is a more specific, the tool that sits on top of things like ChatGPT and is exactly. Even more specific to IEP writing.
Exactly. Yep. That you summed it up right away. The only okay. thing I would add is on Playground, you can automate some of the scheduling of IEP meetings.
Okay.
That's a ton of time. So there's tools for the gen ed team on there. There's tools for the SPED team. There's tools for directors of SPED.
Great.
And then compliance tools for administrators as well.
I'm guessing it works better than the Microsoft Word document or the piece of notebook paper that I used when I was in the schools tracking all of my meetings.
That is the goal.
Yeah.
That is the goal. And we would love feedback on it. And we are looking forward to partnering with new schools all throughout the country.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check the show notes to learn more about where you can connect with Sean, as well as where you can learn more about Playground IEP and IEP Copilot. And if you are a related service provider and you want to learn more about supporting students' executive functioning, as well as how you can lead change management on your team, then check out the School of Clinical Leadership. You can learn more about the program at drkierandudekbrandon.com/clinical leadership. As always, if you found this episode useful, please share it with your friends or your colleagues and leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a guest or if you're interested in being a guest on the De Facto Leaders podcast, please send me an email at talktome@drkarenspeech.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, improve students' performance on state assessments without just teaching to the test? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to ixl.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-based teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's ixl.com/BE. There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into the master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.